I'm Ed the Sock, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader. And now, here's your show.
Now, let's listen.
And now, here's Michelle Badusky, keeping it real.
It is Michelle Badusky with a little bit of laryngitis. I am joined by Vanessa today, and I am really, I would say excited, but I'm not, because I wish we didn't have to have this conversation. But thanks, Vanessa, for joining me. This is going to be the first in a series of podcasts and interviews and discussions that we're having here in the West Bend area about bullying. And this is a topic that's been, you know, Vanessa and I were just talking before we started recording. It's been going on for generations. It's been going on for decades. And it hasn't, you know, bullying itself hasn't changed how people bully has. And we're going to talk about our experiences and kind of where we see things going in the future. So thanks, Vanessa, for joining me today. You don't look so nervous. It's all good. And with a voice like this, you could tell I'm popping lozenges and drinking lots of water. So
now, I actually find those maple candies really helpful.
I'm going to try that. You know, I really think I haven't had a voice in about 6 days, and I could probably get it back if I'd stop talking, but we all know that's not going to happen. So now I've been really passionate about bullying, and I've got some pretty strong opinions that come from a very different experience. So I'm going to just kind of share a little bit with you and with our listeners so that you can get where I'm coming from. And then I want you to do the same. And then we can kind of talk about it. And this came about because I have been approached in the last, 6 months, probably by at least a dozen parents whose children are going through bullying. They're being bullied at school. They are frustrated. They're seeking help. They're seeking support. They don't know what to do. They're kind of at the end of the rope. And I thought this discussion was really important to have. And for me, I graduated school a lot longer than I wish. I graduated in 1993. I was actually in the class of 92, but I graduated late. Because I took, you know, 6 months off for rehab, but that's a whole different discussion. Now, I was bullied as a child, and I thought it was pretty bad, but compared to some of the stories that I'm hearing, I probably got away easy. You know, I grew up in poverty. I came from, a different kind of family, very unhealthy. And I was picked on a lot at school. I didn't have the right clothes. I didn't have those things. But this was in the time before social media, before text messaging, before cell phones, before the internet. So it was all face-to-face. So when I left school or the playground or the bus, it kind of stopped because I was isolated. And I didn't really have a whole lot of friends, and I kind of kept to myself. And as I got older, I got angrier. I was dealing with a lot of stuff at home. I am an adult survivor of child sexual abuse. I was dealing with a lot of that, and I started using drugs when I was about 10 to deal with what was going on. And as that happened and I grew bigger, I got angry. And instead of being bullied, I became the bully. And I was a nasty, nasty girl for almost all of my high school, junior high years. I was the girl that you didn't want to associate with, and I was the one that tormented a lot of other girls. And I picked on the ones that had everything going for them that I wanted, that I was jealous on. I didn't pick on the underdog. I felt like somehow I was some kind of hero standing up for the underdog, and I picked on the popular girls. I picked on the ones, you know, that came from good families, that had those things. And I thought at the time, you know, I was being, I don't know what I thought I was being, but it didn't really dawn on me until about 15 years ago, the damage that I had done when I actually bumped into one of the girls that I went to high school with. And she took one look at me and turned, actually it's about 20 years ago, she turned pale white and almost ran. We bumped into each other in a hotel lobby as adults. I was a parent. And I didn't understand it. I was very confused. And back then, bullying wasn't like it is now. I don't remember if she's listening, because I know she follows me. I don't remember if the school ever got involved. I don't know if our parents ever got involved, but my parents were very non-existent in my life. They didn't have anything to do with my life. I don't remember any kind of things like that that I hear happening now about, you know, parents going to parents going to teachers, superintendents. I don't remember any of that. It might have happened. I don't know. But when she ran, I was really confused, and we reconnected. And the stories she told me about how I made her feel and the fear I inflicted on her, she actually left school because of me. It broke my heart to realize that I had done that to another person. And it was a big part of my recovery as I got clean to make those amends. And we did reconnect. And, you know, I can't ever undo what I did to her. And I wish I could. But the fact that I did that, it's disturbing. And when I hear other people going through it, I feel terrible because I can see it from both sides. And what we were saying before the break is, this is not excusing anyone from bullying. Don't get me wrong. I am totally responsible for what I did, and I should have been punished. I should have, you know, it was inexcusable. But I also was in pain. And I feel like the system failed us both when it ignores bullying, because bullies don't happen in a vacuum. That kind of anger, that kind of pain comes from somewhere. And I feel like perhaps if we were more informed back then, if the school was more informed, she could have been saved from me. And maybe I could have been saved a little bit from myself, if that makes sense. So
I feel like if the school stepped in and realized that bullying, the root of bullying almost always comes from an outside factor. The victim is not the reason for the bullying, which is what I went through. My experience was I was always blamed for existing, and it really hurt because I was the one who was sent to counseling. I was the one who was the problem child, even though I wasn't doing anything. I remember I started getting bullied because I like to read books instead of playing with kids because they picked on me.
Like, yeah, I don't get that. So you were being bullied. So let's get this straight. I graduated class 92, even though I graduated late. You graduated 2012.
Yeah.
20 years later. And you were being blamed for being the victim?
Yes. Victim blaming is such a huge thing in bullying. And it really helped. It really shaped me as a person, because I still have damage. I have a lot of anxiety. Like, when I'm sitting in a room, I have to sit at the back because I am terrified of anything and everyone in the room, which sucks. I'm getting better at it now as an adult. I'm 25 now. I'll be 26 in September, and I've come a long way, but I still have so far to go.
Well, I feel terrible because I feel like I need to apologize for everyone like me who's done things like that to you. And I can't speak for the person that bullied you. I can speak for myself and the girl. And I don't know if there was others, but if there was, please others, contact me.
There's one specific person. And ironically enough, I did run into her a couple of years after graduation. I'm from a really small town in Newfoundland. So like, you do run into people. Like, when I do go home to see my family, there's only one convenience store in the little tiny inlet that I'm from. And she demanded that I talk to her. Like, I have to talk to her. And I turned around and looked at her and was like, I don't owe you anything. This isn't high school, sweetheart. Get away from me.
Good for you.
And it just shook me to my core that she felt that entitled, that I owed her something. And I'm like, sweetheart, I am getting my degree. I live in a completely different province. that life, as soon as I walked out of those doors in June 2012, I stopped owing anyone from that school anything.
And you know what? You didn't owe anybody from that school anything before then, and I'm sorry you felt that way. And that's why it's so important for me to have these conversations, because the girl I hurt, if there was others, I don't necessarily remember, and I'm not making excuses, but high school was a blur to me of drugs and alcohol. And anyways, if there was, please contact me. But this one girl, after we reconnected and we went through stories and I listened to what I did to her strictly out of my own pain, it was heartbreaking, and it made me realize that I needed to work more on me than ever before. But it had nothing to do with her. She's actually an amazing woman. And, you know, I wish I was better to her, because she probably could have helped me if I would have reached out to her back then. And instead I lashed out because I was hurt and I was angry. And she seemed to symbolize everything to me at the time that I didn't have. And that was not fair to her. She was blameless in all of this. You were blameless. Victims are blameless here. And I am not. So do not email me and tell me that I am trying to, you know, justify bullying. I'm not. People are responsible for their own actions. But it comes from somewhere.
That we need to like circle into when we talk about bullying. It is the accountability. Because before we came into this, we talked about how there's a lot of parents. And every time I hear somebody say, oh, not my child, I feel such anger, because it's parents like that who say, not my child would never do that. I'm sorry, but parents like that are part of the problem. Mm-hmm. Because the lack of accountability is what's causing these issues.
Well, and parents, and I'm speaking as a parent, I've got four kids, and I'll be the first one to tell you that my kids can be little jerks sometimes, because kids are kids. But that kind of anger for, you know, I've been hearing stories, and we're going to talk later this week. We're going to have some different stories from parents that are going through this right now. But I've heard stories of, you know, death threats, gun violence, physical violence. And that comes from somewhere, you know, that kind of pain and anger. And I'm not saying the parents are to blame.
No,
parents have to be responsible for addressing whatever issue is going on. And if they refuse to, then they're part of the problem. And if they refuse to acknowledge it or to get involved, they're not helping anybody.
They're just as bad.
And I don't understand that. And I've heard stories about that. And I feel for these kids. You know, you and I were both talking about high school, but I'm hearing stories. I've got kids. My oldest is your age. He's turning 26. My youngest is only 5.
Aww.
So I got kindergarten, grade 3, a grade 9 girl, which is interesting, and of course an adult son. And
ironically, 8th grade was the first time I received a death threat.
Really?
Yep, I received no, it was 7th grade actually.
So tell me, not necessarily what happened, I don't want you to relive the pain, but you're talking about bullying in a completely different generation than me. And I want parents to understand how this happens now, because even in 2012, there's text messaging and internet and social media, things I never had to deal with.
Honestly, I wish that I didn't have to deal with social media back then, because it would have made my life a lot easier.
Well, can you tell me, you know, what was it? Like, I'm not saying you're to blame, but you said that this girl just kind of focused on you.
From second grade until 12th grade.
So 10 years.
10 years. There were some breaks because I had other bullies, but she just kept coming back. And it's like, what can I... In 12th grade, it was about control. In 12th grade, it was she wanted to control everything about me. She wanted to control what I wore. She wanted to control... Oh, you have to come to school with me. Are you coming? Like, she'd start texting me at, oh God, I think like 5:30 maybe around, because we had to get up and be at maybe 6:30. Time like that's a blur. Around 6:30 in the morning, she'd start texting me. Are you coming to school? Are you getting a drive with me? Why aren't you answering your phone? And I'd be like, I would be going to the kitchen, like, showing my mom the messages, and I'm like, I'm scared. And she's in 90% of my classes, and I don't get a break. When I get home, I can't turn on my phone. I have to change my number 3 different times, and it still wouldn't let up, and the school wouldn't do anything. I remember a point in 12th grade that we had a substitute teacher, and there was this group of hockey players who constantly gave me a hard time, relentlessly, for no reason. Like, I just existed. I tried to stay to myself. Writing was my escape. Writing was what got me into university, my passion for the English language. Ironically, I'm a criminology major now, and my goal is to work with victim services to help people who have gone through terrible things and help be that person to say your fear is valid and you are loved and deserving of all the good in the world. And I'm sorry for what happened to you, but we're going to try and make you feel even a little bit more safe or even a little bit more cared about. Because those feelings of validation that are stripped from you when you are told consistently every day for 12, 13 years that you are worthless, it does a lot to you. It takes away everything that you hold close. And music and writing were the two key factors for me that kept me going for those 12 years.
I've seen so many people not be able to come out from it, because what you said is so true. When people tell you again and again and again that you're worthless and you don't matter and you're just there to be used by them, you believe it. And for me, that's what happened to me as a victim. And I turned that pain into something ugly and hurt others. You didn't. So how did you do that? How did you turn it into something positive and come out the other side?
It wasn't without struggle. It was, I think one of the incidents that stands out the most in my head from high school was the time that I did get ganged up on by those guys. And I walked out of the classroom. I slammed the door so hard it nearly popped off the hinges. Principal comes into the hallway demanding to know what's going on. And I'm like, that teacher in there isn't doing anything about what's going on. And I don't feel safe. I took so many weeks off during my senior year that they almost said that I couldn't graduate. And it got to the point where I literally said flat out, well, how can I come to this school if I don't feel safe?
So what did the school do? I mean, this is 10 years of being bullied in school and out of school, because you did have social media and text messaging and things like that. So what happened? Like, I'm assuming during this time, you were obviously telling your parents what was going on.
My parents were trying their hardest. Like, it got to the point that I was diagnosed with anxiety at the age of 7 from the bullying. It's really rare that you ever hear of a child that young being diagnosed with anxiety. My depression was diagnosed at age 12, and more recently we discovered that it's a severe depressive, major depressive disorder, which is freaking lovely. But working on that, that's become its own issue as an adult. But being harassed online and having rumors spread about you that you have no idea where they came from. Like, there, at one point, there was a rumor saying that I had an STD. I was a virgin up until, like, grade 12, I think. Summer of grade 12.
Whatever.
And it was nobody's business. It was seriously nobody's business. But everyone made it theirs. And it was an impossible situation that you couldn't escape from. And, like, you could block people. But when you block somebody, you're literally just muting them. And they can say what they want to everybody else. And that's kind of the dangerous aspect of it, because when you don't know what's being said, how are you supposed to be able to defend yourself? My mom was amazing. She did everything that she could. Like, she went to the school and the school would always laugh and the school would say, oh, well, she's the problem. What is she doing wrong? And my mom's like, my daughter is just existing. She's just trying to get her education so she can get the hell out of this place. Like, I had no real plan beyond grade 12 for the longest time. And it was around grade 11 that I found out about teaching English abroad. And I'm like, oh my God, this is my ticket out of here. Cool. So I became obsessed with teaching English as a second language. And that was actually what got me into university. I am currently finishing my degree via distance through Memorial University, but my degree is from St. Thomas University in Fredericton, New Brunswick, where they have such amazing mental health services. And that was where the healing really began. Because being at a school that has such amazing professors who see eye to eye with you and will be willing to have those conversations and talk about the stuff that hurts to help you overcome what is holding you back. Like, amazing educators like the ones at St. Thomas are the ones that are really the ones that I need to thank, because without them I wouldn't be here, and without my childhood best friend who told me I'm going to be a lawyer and you're just going to be an English teacher. So despite him, I took criminology. And after a rocky time when I was 19, when I was sexually assaulted, I felt so much pain and anger toward the world for so long. And it was, ironically enough, a comic book character from a show called Arrow. I'm not sure if any of the listeners have heard of it.
I don't, but I'll look it up.
Yeah, there's a character on it. Her name is Sarah Lance, and she came onto the show as this vigilante who was putting would-be rapists in the hospital or in the morgue. And one of her first lines on the show was, "No woman should ever suffer at the hands of man." And that right there was when it clicked that I could be part of the solution instead of just being. Because in the same episode, they said there are three types of people that go through a crucible. The ones that get through it, the ones that let it beat them, or the ones that learn to live with the pain. I realized that I had become the person that just lived with the agony that I had been through, and that I didn't want to be that person anymore. I wanted to be the one to get through it so I can help people come out the other side.
Well, and I love that. And I love that about you. And we've had some great discussions, and it's, you know, I'm definitely not going the same, you know, same direction as you, but that's why I have these conversations and these, I have these hard talks and bring up these conversations that people often wonder why I do it. Because it usually, you know, paints a big target on myself for online bullying from adults now, and we're going to talk about that. But I really believe that, like you said, when we have those experiences, I feel like I'm obligated to open up and talk about them so that other people maybe can avoid what I went through. And if I can help one person, then it's worth painting that target.
That's why I do advocacy work too, because
absolutely,
as I told you before, I did advocacy work in Newfoundland back in 2013 when there was a local author that happened to be a family friend who knew my story and was like, "Hey, do you want to come and do a couple of talks? I'm doing a bunch of press for my new book, and you having your experiences, it would tie really well together. Like having somebody who has gone through this to accompany a book about anti-bullying." It's great. I'm really glad that I had that experience, which is pushing me to do the advocacy work like this talk, because if my story can help one person, like you said, that is more than enough for me, because then I know that somebody out there is maybe suffering just a little bit less because they know that they're not alone. And that's one of the messages that we need to keep preaching, like, your voice can be heard.
Oh, absolutely. And I think that's exactly why I do what I do, because we need to have those voices. And I think they're absolutely drowned out now by, you know, and I know you follow me, you know, like, yeah, I know that.
Comments on your stuff.
And that's where we came up with the, you know, hashtag take back the tool, because here we're talking to, you know, two sides of 20-year-old and 10-year-old bullying, but this is still happening today. This is happening in our schools. I am not blaming the teachers. I'm not blaming the administration, but there's so many aspects of this, and I feel like, you know, we can sit there and say we have zero tolerance in our school for bullying, and I don't think that's ever going to be realistic. Here we are talking about how bullying has existed for a generation. And even before that, I mean, you look at movies like Stand By Me that happened in the 50s. Bullying has been around forever. It will probably always be around forever because people lash out when they're in pain. The difference is we now
a conversation about teachers who bully students. So, because I was also a victim of that. Because
you know what? I think what happened is with social media now, it's taken on a whole different perspective. And I don't think our education system is set up to deal with it at all.
It isn't. And because they try to draw the line that what happens outside of school doesn't matter, but it does come into school, and it starts at the school, really, because the school is where you meet these people and these bullshit rivalries and grudges, and it's where it all begins. School is the playing ground. It's a war ground.
Absolutely.
Or a cesspool, whatever way you want to see it.
Well, and I was one of those people. I loved school for the education. I, you know, was a straight A student. I was quiet in class. I think I was anyways. I did very well in class. And that's where, you know, I had some fantastic teachers. But it was outside the classroom. It was in the hallways. It was in the cafeteria. It was, you know, back in the day, we had a smoking area outside. You know, it was the park behind the school. It was all these things. It was the playground where there were no teachers. And I think my generation was a little bit different, and we actually had a lot more respect for adults. So if an adult was present, we didn't see this.
We had one teacher in my school that people were terrified of. They weren't terrified. It was just the amount of respect that we all had for this one specific teacher. And I really have to like give him his due, because Mr. Connors, his classroom was the one classroom I felt safe in. When you came into his classroom, your phone was in your backpack, your eyes were on the board. There was nobody in that school that was respected more by students, even by students who didn't have him. They knew not to cross him, because he was just that. He was fun. He was hilarious if he wasn't being strict. He ruled with an iron fist, and he was also the most gracious person that I had ever known in that entire school. And I still talk to him to this day. We'll check in once in a while, like, hey, how's it going? And educators like that are what kids need. Kids need an ally, somebody to actually command the room and make them feel safe. Because in so many other classrooms, I had a teacher who constantly belittled me and picked on me because I wasn't good at math. She would announce the fact that I had gotten low percentage scores. My lowest grade in math, I think, was a 13, but it only got revealed in 12th grade that I actually have a learning disability in math called dyscalculia, which is essentially dyslexia with numbers. And I actually went to this teacher and I told her, I'm like, I think you owe me an apology for 3 years of humiliating me consistently. And she's just like, what for? And I'm like, I have dyscalculia. I wasn't stupid. I wasn't holding your class back. I was doing math that I couldn't do to begin with because of a learning disability that wasn't my fault. To this day, I have trouble with math, but it doesn't really have much effect on my school or work, because the most I have to do is stats.
Yeah, I hate statistics. I hate it.
I love stats. Stats Canada is your best friend if you're a criminology major.
Well, you know, and I think what you said was really important, because when I was in school, I know it's a different generation. I'm not quite a boomer, but you know, I'm in between. We really, we did not cross the teachers. You know, the way students behave and talk to teachers now, I could never imagine doing.
Substitute quit. One day, she lasted one day and she quit because these specific groups of kids, like this one little group, caused the teacher to quit.
And that blows my mind. It blows my mind, that kind of disrespect. It also blows my mind the other way, that we have educators that are trying to be everybody's best friend. We also have parents that are doing that now, that, you know, we, like you said, when parents are brought up and said, well, not my kid, not my kid. my job, and I posted something about this on my Facebook page, so if you follow me on social media, my job as a parent hasn't changed in 26 years. My job is not to be my friend, kids' friends. My job is not to raise children. My job is to raise adults. And if my kids don't like me, that's just too damn bad. It's not my job. They don't have to like me. And I find that that's changed, and we're seeing, you know, this societal shift where we have to be everybody's friends, and those teachers that ruled with an iron fist and commanded the room, it's almost like they're not even allowed to do it anymore from just administrative, like from an administrative standpoint, from a societal standpoint. And, you know, I didn't get the strap. We didn't have the strap. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about commanding respect.
Somebody who can stand in front of a room and everyone is quiet out of respect for that person.
It's an expectation that we don't have. And if we can't garner respect as adults, how are we going to expect our kids to respect each other? So 20 years ago, I was on both sides of the fence. I've had to come to terms with what I did to other people and use that to fuel a change in my life and, you know, my mission to have these conversations. 10 years ago, you went through what you did, and now you're working as an advocate. It's fueled your whole life and your career. But there are still kids out there that are suffering. And when I say suffering, I mean as victims and as bullies. And how do we address that now? Because I'm hearing from parents that it is ugly out there, that the social media bullying, the text messaging, my 14-year-old daughter's not on social media. I spend enough time on social media dealing with the harassment and the ugliness. And, you know, even last week I did something that I never thought I'd do, and I shut my page down for a while because I got sick of it.
You had every right to do that. It was happening.
Yeah, it was ugly, but I'm 45-year-old and a pretty damn strong, emotionally well person. How do we expect our children to deal with that when adults don't even have the ability to do that?
Like, you see people taking social media sabbaticals all the time.
And that's as an adult. It's like, crazy. We are ugly to each other. You know, if you're watching this on our Keeping It Real Facebook page, you will know that we have very strict rules against bullying. We have incredible rules and zero tolerance because, and actually, I shouldn't say that because I let people get away with too much. Because I do have thick skin, I let them get away with it, and that's come to an end now. But
it's pretty bad that you've had to come to this point that you are having to do that, and you are having to block more and more people from the page because adults don't know when enough is enough. This is what terrifies me as an adult now, but also seeing the children that are coming up through these generations. If they're seeing adults who are not afraid of hurting one another, who are so relentless in what they say to one another, I saw a really terrifying post yesterday on Facebook that it got shared in a group that I'm in, and it was basically this picture of a boys can be princesses if they want. There's a banner, there's Cinderella dressed up, and there's a little boy being dragged by the collar of his shirt by a mom with a belt in her hand saying, "Not my son." And the comments under it were, there was one, and it was a meme, and it says, "My kid can be gay if he wants from the foster home he's going to be living in if he is." And that terrified me. Like, as somebody who grew up with being bullied, because I didn't formally come out until I was 21 because I was so scared. And no people in high school kind of knew. I never really let it be known because I was confused as all hell. And seeing the bullying and seeing the gay bashing that's happening is terrifying to me because kids, like LGBTQ kids, they have the highest suicide rate. And I can't stand seeing lives get lost because people don't know when enough is enough and they don't care. There's a post circulating about a father who gave his daughter two options: to give up all of her technology, all her social media, or shave her head because she ripped a wig off a kid who was going through chemo, and she had no remorse. because she ripped the wig off somebody with.
Well, good for that father. You know what? And I think that's what is happening here is we're putting these expectations, and I'm getting a little angry here. You can tell I still don't have a voice, but you know, when my hands start going, if we have this expectation of these children to behave and treat our children with respect and dignity, but we can't do it as parents. There's something systematically wrong with society when we can't even do it as adults. And you know what, when I talk about bullying, and I think we need to address this because it's going to set the scene for the rest of this series, bullying is not disagreeing. I get called a bully online all the time because
you're not a bully.
Because, you know, I'm like, oh, that's your opinion. Why? Can you back that up with stats? Or
usually,
you know,
they can't.
Or whatever. That's a disagreement. You can disagree with people. You can have a difference of opinion. You can even argue passionately. That's not bullying. Bullying is when you intentionally try to diminish a person for who they are, who you attack things. Like I said this the other day because I got attacked online and the comments were about my appearance, my sexuality, my attractiveness, all of these other things. Which I know fundamentally as a 45-year-old woman that are not true. And I definitely have come to a place in my life where some random man's opinion of how big my ass is really isn't going to affect my self-esteem. But 13-year-old me?
Would have been terrified.
I would have been devastated. Absolutely devastated. And these are adults doing this to other adults. And that's not even the worst of it. Like, that's not even coming close. I'm not painting myself as a victim here because there are real victims out there.
No, you're giving examples of these things that are happening. Like, these adults who don't know when to let up or don't know when enough is enough, because you see it all the time on the page. You see it in comment sections. I've come to a point where if I see a certain topic is being mentioned, I will avoid the comment section purposely because I know that it's going to set me off in some way, because reading the comments from that graphic, like the image of the kid being dragged away and like the not my child, that really struck a chord with me because of how many people. I have a friend who did go to a conversion camp and it did mess her up really bad, and how resilient she has been after going through that is what makes me so proud to be considered her little sister, because we were in a sorority together in New Brunswick. And she was so proud of me on my wedding day because she's like, you've come so far. And all like the 2 years I've known you, you've come so far. You're so resilient. And I'm like, it's because of people like you who took my hand and told me it was okay to be gay. It was okay for me to not be straight, and it's okay to not be okay. Because when I was struggling and not wanting to go to counseling sessions and not getting the help that I needed because of everything I've been through, she was the one to take my hand and take me there, or be like, okay, let's get out of the house, let's go to the comic book store, let's go for a walk downtown. Like, she would get me out of my own head when I was boiling over, and I'm so thankful for people like that.
Well, and I think, I think you nailed it. We need to have these conversations. We need to let people know they're not alone with, you know, whether they're adults or children. I think this is important. This series is important. And I have interviews and discussions set up with parents all over the area that are dealing with their children going through this. So what would you tell them? What, because they're going to listen to this. What's your advice to those parents? What needs to happen here? What can we do to stop? You know, my generation went through it. Your generation went through it. How do we stop another generation from having to get counseling to deal with the after effects instead of just preventing this shit to begin with?
The question has always been, how do we stop it? But we both know systematically there is no way to stop bullying. But there is, I've always felt like so long as there is support and that there are people that do care, because if we were to, in an ideal world, instead of putting victims in counseling first, like, yes, get them the counseling because they are going to need it. Like, if I had had a better counselor instead of the school-appointed one growing up, I would have been better off because the counselor could just say, like, oh, yeah, like, it'll be okay. Like, just talk about it. Like, just sitting there and listening doesn't do anything. You need to be active in the conversation. So having somebody who is there to listen to the victim, but also somebody to counsel the bully, because a lot of times, like you said, bullies are usually in pain because this anger that they are directing towards somebody else, it's coming from somewhere. And if we were to just take a look at where that anger is coming from and just work on that instead of ostracizing the victim and blaming them, that would be a step in the right direction.
You know,
if we stopped talking about what the victim did to cause the bullying and instead looked at, why is the bully doing this? What is the cause of them lashing out and targeting somebody or someone? There could be more than one victim. If we looked at that instead of putting all the blame on the victim, I think that that would help a lot. But as parents with kids who are bullied, I feel bad for my mom because so many nights she spent up crying with me when I was having pain in my stomach and I couldn't breathe because of how scared I was to go to school the next day. I feel like parents just need to listen to their kids and be there for them as best they can. And I know you said, like, you can't be your kid's best friend, but it does help. It does help being the kid's best friend and sitting there on the couch and watching shows. Like, my mom and I used to watch Will and Grace and Gilmore Girls together. And we still talk about Gilmore Girls all the time. Or Grey's Anatomy, which my mom got addicted to a couple of years ago, but recently gave up because the blood was a little bit much for her. But things like that, finding common ground with your kids and finding something to help them escape what's happening so they can, even for an hour, have a place that they can escape to. Just creating that little, I know that people make fun of safe spaces, but this is not something to make fun of. Having a place that you feel safe, where you can disconnect from the social media and just watch stupid dog videos on YouTube or things that make you happy. For me, I wrote and wrote and wrote, and I listened to a crazy amount of music, and that was my escape for so long, and it still is. And just finding those things that make your kid feel safe, that is what you need to do. And foster that safety, because it could become a career someday. Like, music, art, things like this, they're forms of therapy for a reason.
Well, and it's funny you say that, because my writing is eventually what saved me, and I still use it today as a form of therapy. And I love what you said there, because when I look at it that way, I guess I am my kid's best friend, and our home is a safe space. And I've created it that way because I know what it's like not to feel safe. And where I used it to fuel anger and hatred towards others and myself, I never want to see that happen to another child. And again, I am not excusing those that do bully, but they need help too. And you know what? Those that bully as children, if they don't get help, they're going to run the risk of growing up to be these adults that bully and create children that bully. And because children learn what they live. And yeah. I'm not proud of who I used to be, but I'm sure as hell proud of who I am today. And I don't ever want to see anyone go through that. I don't want anyone like me to turn into what I was and hurt people like you. And you didn't deserve that. And I am so glad you came out the other side and became this amazing woman that you are today.
I'm a work in progress. I always say that, like, nobody's ever done learning or growing. I just say, like, I'm a work in progress.
I think we all are. We all are. And that's what this series is about. And I want to thank you for joining me today, Vanessa, and sharing your story and your hope and insight. Because as we continue this series, talking to parents and educators, you know what? It's not about blame here. It's not about who's to blame. It's about how do we work together for a solution. And it's not just happening in our schools. It's happening online. It's happening with kids. It's happening with adults. And we are all responsible for that. I've said this so many times online. Would you tell your children to sit, stand around a schoolyard watching someone get picked on or beat up? Would you tell your children that's okay? And of course, people say, no, 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 you got to get in there and you got to protect them. I'm like, then why aren't you doing it online? Why are you joining in on the fray? Why are you getting in on the name calling or the belittling or the harassment? And it's
the bystander effect.
You know, we have to take responsibility for the example we are setting for our children online and in person, because children learn what they live. And if we are acting like assholes online, we can't change that. We can't go, oh, that's my online personality. You know what? You are
so
who you are.
So online personality and like in person. So these are two different people. Last I checked, it's your thumbs typing those words right now.
That's right. And you know what? Whether you are in grade 8 or you are 80, it doesn't excuse you. And we are all guilty of something like that. But we need to take accountability and responsibility for that and start making a change. And today's a good day for that. So thank you, Vanessa. I look forward to the rest of the series. I hope when those videos and those podcasts are recorded, you can chime in and share your wisdom with those parents. And again, thank you so much. I absolutely love what you're doing, and you are an inspiration to me.
Thank you.
And I know to so many others. So thank you for being with me today.
You've been keeping it real with Michelle Badusky. You can follow her on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
I'm Ed DeSoc, and this is FU Politics on Fun, the FU Network, powered by your support on Patreon.com, P-A-T-R-E-O-N, Patreon.com/FU Network TV, and through PayPal at FUNetworkTV@gmail.com. Drop us a few bucks. Don't be a freeloader.